You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Come on.
Spending too much time on social? Is your daily screen time over 2 hours? Are you a little bit overweight? Not saving enough money? Any or all of these are familiar. Strive could be for you. The Strive 2-week online bootcamp will help you to detox your mind, body, and money, getting you on your way to a happier, healthier, wealthier, and more confident life. Go to strivedetox.com, strivedetox.com, and get your mind, body, and money right.
David, you grab that side, I'll grab this side, and we will stretch this dollar. Are you ready?
All set.
All right. Welcome to Money Savage Further. This is George Grumbacher. Our guest today is David Premer. He is the founder and chief sales scientist at Cerebral Selling, and he is the author of Sell the Way You Buy. I'm excited to have you on. David, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Oh, awesome. Well, look, thanks for having me on, George. So yeah, so, you know, I'm kind of like, I describe myself as the Bob Ross of selling. Like, I'm one of these like happy accidents. Because not because I'm an exquisite painter, but, you know, most of us, especially in the sales world, get into sales by accident. You know, it's not something we learn in college or university, and it's something that's very accessible to most Americans. You know, 1 in 9 Americans are in sales. But I started my career like everyone else. I got into sales by accident. I was ironically a research scientist before getting into sales at the turn of the dot-com boom, so around 99-2000. Absolutely fell in love with sales because I thought of sales almost like a bit of an engineering problem, right? Like when I say like this, the customer gets it. When I say like that, they don't. And so I started getting like really into kind of persuasive science and sales psychology. And after 20 years being in sales across 4 amazing startups and 5 awesome years at a company called Salesforce, which I know a lot of people probably heard of, you know, I had fully developed my love of sales, but it actually bothered me a little bit that when you tell people you're in sales, you become the enemy automatically. And so it's funny, not only, you know, do you become the enemy, but even as a sales leader and a sales professional, one thing I realized over the years is that I don't really like talking to salespeople. I like to buy stuff.
That's right.
I like to buy stuff, but I don't like talking to salespeople. And so I tried to combine my 20 years of sales experience and sales leadership, building sales machines, as well as my background as a research scientist, to come up with kind of a way of thinking about sales that is empathetic, scientifically proven, accessible, and is really kind of like a modern way of selling for the new generation. So that's what I do. That's why I do it.
Nice. I appreciate that. How long do you think you're going to be able to use that whole Bob Ross of selling? Do you think you got like 10, 20 years left before people, before millennials and then the generation after them have any idea what you're talking about?
Well, it's a good point because sometimes you use like, you know, the A-Team Ghostbusters references. Mm. In fact, the start of my book, the very first chapter, says that one of my favorite movies growing up was the 1984 classic, The Karate Kid. And I kind of relate back some Cobra Kai, you know, tactics. And I use the phrase Cobra Kai. And people know it because not from the 1984 movie per se, but because there's been a YouTube series and it's been part of pop culture. So I'm hoping that Bob Ross continues, you know, it's been a while since Bob Ross, but I'm hoping he continues to be pervasive in our culture, so I can keep that on. But you're absolutely right to point that out. Got to be careful.
Yeah. But I bet he is all over YouTube in one form, fashion, or another. Anyway, what you mentioned that 1 in 9 Americans are, like, I guess, in some kind of a sales career or function. But you and I were talking before we got on, and I made the comment that we're all in sales in one form or function. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Not only do I agree with that, but there's data to support. So one of my favorite, if you want to call it non-sales selling books, is Dan Pink's book called To Sell as Human. And, you know, he was the one who did this initial research into like, well, how many people in America are actually in sales? And according to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, it's about 1 in 8, 1 in 9. But when he did his survey, he said, you know, hey, look, you may not think you're in sales, but what percentage of your job every day would you say involves moving someone? He uses the term moving, like emotionally moving someone from one position to the next. And he found that in some jobs, like that can be, you know, maybe for your listeners here, like ask yourself, I mean, you're a financial advisor. I mean, there's a lot of people who do all sorts of jobs. You're an engineer. How much of your day actually involves moving people from one position to the next? And he found that actually for some of us, it can be upwards of 80% of our job involves, you know, quote unquote, non-sales selling. So it's actually quite a pervasive, action in most jobs in America.
Yeah. And to your point as well, most people do not want to be sold, but we do want to buy. So tell me a little bit about this idea of selling the way that you buy.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, you know, we were talking before as well. You mentioned you have a couple of kids. I have three kids as well. And I don't know about you, when your kids come to you and they're about to like hit you up for something, like they want to live somewhere or they want to download an app or, you know, they want to have like some snack that they're not supposed to have. I don't know about you, when my kids come to me with that kind of stuff, like I can tell immediately. Right before they like in the first half a second, we're like, Dad, like, okay, the answer is no. Right. And so do you feel me?
Yes. 100%.
Yes. So like, and I ask people, like, when you get a call from a telemarketer, for example, how long does it take you to tell them that they're reading from a script?
Yeah.
Right.
Like pretty quick,
very quick. And so, you know, I do believe that human beings we're very perceptive. Right. And when we get something that almost like feels like a pitch, like we feel like we're being pitched, we become automatically resistant, right? And so the idea behind sell the way you buy, there's two principles. Number one is there's an empathetic component, which is as a salesperson, sometimes we kind of, you know, we act as though we can treat people differently, like we're in sales mode. Right? We're like, oh, well, excuse me, sir. Like I'm flashing my sales badge at you and say, excuse me, George, like I'm just going to treat you like a jerk here for the next half hour. Because it's okay. I'm in sales. It's okay. Right. But that's not how it works. And so oftentimes we don't use tactics that would work on us if we found ourselves on the buying side. So there's that empathetic component of like, just don't use tactics that wouldn't work on you if you were in your customer's position. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is, for most of us, the way we actually buy and the forces that move us to purchase are not something that we're conscious of. That's not the way our brain works. We don't walk into the, you know, I was listening to your podcast about the jeans. We don't walk into the, you know, the jean store and say, you know what, I'm feeling exceptionally, you know, thrifty today, or I'm feeling exceptionally rich today. I think I will invest in this. Like we have just emotional gut reactions to the things that we buy, whether it's clothes, the car that we drive, the food that we order for lunch. But the thing is, we're not often conscious of what those forces are. And so when we say sell the way you buy, the idea is to really unpack scientifically the way we make purchasing decisions so that when we want to try to be more persuasive and sell to others, we can operate along those same pathways.
Okay. So how does one begin to do that? How do we begin to unpack that?
Yeah, well, like, you know, the first thing is to realize that, you know, the number one thing that people buy, and this is, you know, oftentimes we kind of trick ourselves into thinking that people buy solutions. Like, you have a problem, I'm going to go, like, find a solution to that problem. But really, the thing people buy first and foremost is feelings. They buy emotions first and foremost. And you know this. For example, when you come home at the end of a long day and you say to yourself, you know what I deserve, right? Like, what do you deserve, George?
At the end of a long day, sometimes I like to have a beer.
There you go. Okay, now look, if I was, you know, evaluating your decision to have a beer and say, okay, does this make the most logical sense for George to have a beer? Like, no, it makes no logical sense. Like, if I were to, you know, for example, if you're a listener here, if I were to ask you to write down everything that you ordered for lunch in the last month, and then I told you, I'm going to take that list and I'm going to show that list to your doctor, and right? And your doctor's going to vote on how often, what percentage of the time did George eat the best thing for him for lunch? You know, the laugh tells it all, right? Like, yeah. Okay, it's not most of the time, at the very least, right? And so the idea is, like, we buy feelings first and foremost, from the car that you drive, to the clothes that you wear, to the technology, to the investments that you make, to how you spend your money. If I were to ask you, like, think about, if you're listening here, think about something you spend money on that another person would look at that thing and say, that's ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
We all have those things. And so first and foremost, we buy feelings. And so it's really important to understand that feelings are what drive most of our purchasing decisions.
Got it. So I am in a particular role. I'm just trying to back into how people can, in whatever capacity or job they're in, or as a parent, how do they then start to actually apply this in their life?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that we always mistake is that people walk around thinking about our products and services all day long. So let's say you're a financial advisor
For sure.
And you have all these investments, right, that you could put people into. Like, people aren't necessarily walking around saying to themselves, you know what investments I'd like to get into? I'd like to get into more of this and more of that. So when George shows up and says, hey, I got these investments, what do you think? They say, that's awesome. This is what I've been searching for the whole time, right? That's not what they do. They don't walk around thinking about our products and services. What they do walk around sometimes thinking about are their own problems, right? Their
sure.
own problems and challenges. And so what we need to be doing is positioning whatever it is we're, you know, I'm going to say quote unquote selling, because maybe you are one of these, you know, 12% of people that are in, 11% of people in a bona fide sales role, but maybe you're just a non-sales seller, right? And you're trying to, you know, move someone from their position to yours. Focusing on the problem or the enemy is often a much better place to start. So, like, for example, you know, let's say there's a company actually based in Chicago called Trunk Club. Do you know Trunk Club at all, Jordan?
Yeah, I think I've heard of them.
So Trunk Club, so what do they actually do? Let's say I was trying to be in sales for Trunk Club. What do they actually do? It's a service, and it started as a service for men. They were actually acquired a little while ago, a few years ago, by Nordstrom. But they're a service for men, and what you would do is you would go in and you would put your measurements and the clothes that you like to wear and all this kind of stuff in their system. And every month, a virtual stylist, would pick out clothes and ship those clothes to you, like in a box. And whatever clothes you liked, you kept, and whichever ones you didn't like, you sent back. Trunk Club, that's what it was. But that's not what they, when they, you know, try to communicate what their value was to other people, they started with the enemy. And the enemy was men who love to dress well but hate to
shop.
There you go, right? We were talking about this before. So I'm a man and I love to dress well, but I hate to shop, right? And now Trunk Club says, hey, look, we're for men who love to dress well and hate to shop. Now you're leaning in and you're saying, Trunk Club, like, what do you do? This is really interesting, because I'm a man and I love to dress well and I hate to shop. So the idea is to lead with the enemy, you know, and there's lots of examples of companies who do this really well, where they're leading with the problem, because the problem is going to be the emotional hook that's going to draw your customer in, and then you can start talking about the product, the actual product and service you provide.
Got it. I love it. I think that makes all sense in the world. That is a great example right there. Okay. So when we're trying to move people, focus on really what the problem is, recognize that people are going to buy emotions and feelings first, and then I guess back it up with evidence of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way humans make decisions. I mean, if you've ever come home with something, or had a spouse or partner that ever comes home with something, maybe it's my wife. She comes home. God bless my wife. She comes home one day and she says, you know, hey David, I got this jacket, and you know the great thing about this jacket is that it was the last one in my size. And it's the perfect color. It goes with everything that I have. And it's perfect for all of these events I'm going to wear it to, and the temperature outside. Like, that's often referred to as post-purchase rationalization, right? You bought something. Now you just want to, you know, you want to create the emotional comfort to make sure that you are, you know, you are satisfied with that purchase. And so we use emotions before, during, and after purchases. And that's really the way we have to sell.
Nice. So I just take us into the time machine, and if you don't mind, applying this to Salesforce, what would the emotional trigger be?
To the Salesforce, to the company?
Yeah. No, I mean the company Salesforce.
Yeah. So, suppose I was working at Salesforce, and how would I position the products and services?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, people don't care about, oh, you sell CRM, or you sell customer success, or you sell marketing automation. And we used to say things like, look, you're trying to connect with your customers, but the reality is your customers are getting harder to reach than they used to be, and they're already 70% of the way through the sales cycle of whatever they're trying to buy before they even reach out to you. Right? So how do you connect with a customer who is, more skeptical, peer-driven, harder to reach than ever before, right? And again, we're not trying to sell. I haven't talked about any products, right?
Yeah.
The goal is for you to lean in. We would say things, people are busy nowadays, and in the rise of kind of the mobile workforce, we said, as a busy entrepreneur, George, you should be able to run your business from your phone. You shouldn't be tethered to your desk all day long.
Right.
Right? So again, you don't even know if I have a product for this, right? But what I'm doing is I'm speaking the language of my customer's pain. And the beauty of speaking the language of your customer's pain is that if your customer has that pain, if you are a man that loves to dress well, but you hate to shop, then you're going to lean in and you're going to say, well, tell me more about what is this service that you have? But if you're a man who loves to dress well and loves to shop, these men exist, George, from what I've been told. Then you're going to say, well, then this is not for me, right? I like to go to the store. I like to shop. And that's a good thing, right? Because when these customers come into your sales funnel, they kind of reach out to you and say, hey, look, this sounds really interesting. They're going to have a much higher degree of intent, right? Versus the ones who were turned off by what you said. So this is this idea of when you pick an enemy, you are by default polarizing, right? You're going to figure out, you're going to be on one side of this argument or the other. The customers who are like the 2 out of 10s that aren't really interested in what you have to do, they're not going to call you, right? Which is a good thing. They're not going to be gumming up the works and taking up your time. You're going to get more and higher intent customers because they've fallen in love with the same enemy that you have.
Nice. I love it. So now let's arm your children with the tools that they need to be able to move you to where they want to move you to. how old is the oldest one?
My oldest one is 14, actually.
Okay, so this is perfect. You need to arm this child with the ability and the tools to move David. So
we actually do this quite often. So my kids, I'm very grateful. I have 3 kids. They're super proud of me. Dad, we can't believe you wrote a whole book and your name's on it and the whole thing. But sometimes my 14-year-old will come to me or my wife, and she'll be like, Dad, Mom, with that tone. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, okay, back it up. Try it again, but with more conviction this time. Right. Because if you have conviction, and this is another thing when people buy feelings, and you see this all the time, and this is not a politically charged statement, but politicians are very good at this. Politicians are very good at speaking with conviction and using facts and data that sound right, even if they're not.
For sure.
Right. And so this idea of the conviction is a very powerful persuasive tactic in sales. When we hear people that sound like they know what they're talking about, it inspires confidence in us. And that's the lesson we often give our kids is like, no, if you're going to if you're tentative, you're not sure about something, that's okay. But if you're sure about something and you believe that there's value in what you're asking for, then ask for it with conviction. The person on the other end is more likely to listen.
Got it. So When somebody picks up the book, are you hoping that they will? Well, let me just ask a better question. What do you hope people get out of reading the book?
Yeah, well, so look, one of the reasons why I do what I do is because I love sales. I love the sales profession. I believe sales is the best profession in the world when done correctly. But it still bothers me that when you ask people who do you think of when you think about a salesperson? They think about someone who's negative, right? There's not that many professions in the world where that happens.
Sure.
And so part of my mission is to do what I can to elevate the sales profession so that, 10, 20 years from now, the sellers of the future will have a much easier time just in terms of the perception of the profession overall. So that's kind of number one, why I wrote the book. But number two, I do believe that everyone is struggling, especially nowadays, to have their voice heard. There are so many solutions. There's so many providers in the market. Both what you and I do, there's a million people that do what we do.
For sure. Right?
And so the question is, like, how do we stand out? And that problem is only going to get worse, right? There's only going to be more and more people that do what we do. And I'm not just talking about people in the sales profession. You know, if you're a personal trainer, you're a hairstylist, you're a financial planner, you know, you're a banker, whatever it is you do, we're all in this position. And so what I'm hoping to do, this is a book. It's actually, it's a sales book, not just for salespeople. It's a sales book for everyone to understand how to be more persuasive in your kind of, you know, selling motion by understanding a little bit about human nature. So there's a lot of great stories there. There's a lot of science. There's a lot of data and statistics to help arm you with the tactics and conviction you need to be more persuasive in your, you know, in your growth activities, quite honestly.
Love it. David, thank you so much for coming on. Where can Savage Nation learn more about you? Where can they get a copy of the book?
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. Everything that I have is on my website. So my website is cerebralselling.com. One word. It's my business, cerebralselling.com. And I actually give away a ton of content for free. So I have blog. I have a YouTube channel also called Cerebral Selling, which you can access from the website. And you can find out more information about the book there as well. The book is called Sell the Way You Buy, and if you just search up Sell the Way You Buy on your favorite bookseller, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, if you're in Canada, Indigo, you will find it there.
Perfect. Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show David your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to CerebralSelling.com, check out all the great resources on his blog and his YouTube channel, and pick up a copy of Learn to Sell the Way You Buy wherever you buy books. Thanks again, David.
Pleasure, George. Thanks for having me.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight because we are all in this together.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.